Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I will cut taxes. Cut taxes for 95% of all working families. Because in an economy like this, the last thing we should do is raise taxes on the middle class.
Barack Obama throwing down the gauntlet on the tax issue in his speech at Invesco Field in Denver last night before 85,000 screaming, cheering supporters. Brian Lehrer in Denver and ready to head to the Twin Cities for the Republican convention if it actually happens. Some of the buzz this morning is that they may actually postpone the Republican convention because of Hurricane Gustav bearing down on New Orleans. But let's talk to Ross Douthat. He's a senior editor with The Atlantic magazine. He's also co-author of the book Grand New Party, being widely read in Republican and policy circles. Also, Colin Levy from The Wall Street Journal editorial board, as we talk about all of this, including John McCain's pick of Sarah Palin to be his running mate. So, Ross and Colin, thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks
for having us.
Your reaction first to Sarah Palin, Colin Levy.
You know, I really have to say, I thought that this was just sort of a dazzling choice this morning. I think that McCain has done something that almost no one thought he could do, which is after a night like Barack Obama had last night with, 85,000 people there in attendance and incredibly high production value and a lot of excitement and a historic day, he's actually changed the tide this morning and recaptured the momentum. There's this incredible boomerang effect happening, just listening to the buzz on, from immediate response as this started to leak out this morning. I think it's really significant.
And we were wondering in the media here in Denver whether they were going to try to step on Obama's big night by leaking this around, 6 o'clock or something last night, so that the networks would be doing that split screen kind of coverage. They chose not to do that. They just let it out in the last few minutes. Your reaction, Ross Douthat? Do you know her?
I don't know her personally, but I agree. I think it's a really gutsy choice, and I think it has the potential to be a really great choice. She's somebody who, is known primarily to people who follow American politics perhaps more closely than is healthy. But she's known as someone who has a great personal story. She's a mother of five. She is someone who ran against a corrupt Republican establishment in Alaska and won. She's an enormously popular governor there. And she checks a lot of boxes for McCain in a lot of surprising ways. She's a pro-life woman. She's a pro-life working mom. She's someone who has a strong record on environmental issues. She's pushed for curbs on greenhouse gas emissions in Alaska while also having an incredibly strong record on being in favor of drilling in Anwar. And she's in favor of drilling in Anwar, and she's from Alaska, which, there are some potential problems in the sense that McCain hasn't come all the way around on being in favor of drilling, but in terms of drilling in Anwar specifically, but in terms of the drilling issue more generally, she, if anything, helps him on that front. And she's young. She's not from Washington. She's a reformist. She basically helps his message in every possible way. The only danger is that she turns out not to be ready for prime time when she gets thrust into national politics.
Go ahead, Colin.
Sorry, if I could just pick up on something Ross was saying. I completely agree with that. I think what's so interesting about this is that you have an unusual situation here where you have a pick of a real sort of true, red-blooded conservative as vice presidential pick that's being discussed in terms of being an unconventional candidate. So in that way, you've got a situation now where after the past couple weeks where there was a lot of talk about, potential pro-choice candidates in Ridge or Lieberman and some grumbling in the base, and now you have a very strong pro-life Republican in Sarah Palin. And, people have discussed this issue of her Down syndrome child. They haven't always discussed it completely explicitly, which is that the reason this is such an important issue to pro-lifers is that with a lot of prenatal testing these days, these are things that are screened for, and sometimes people choose not to have those children. And so I think that sends a very strong message to the pro-life base.
You know, one of the things we noticed at Invesco Field last night, and actually at the convention throughout the week, was the very visible presence of people with disabilities, particularly people in wheelchairs and others who were very much accommodated at the Democratic convention. So I don't know if both parties are very interested in putting disability rights into play right now, but that is an interesting dynamic that you raise. I want to take a phone call right now, and folks, you can call. Anybody from Alaska listening? Anybody who was ever from Alaska listening right now and have any knowledge or opinions about Sarah Palin? Call in, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment to our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll be looking for it. And we have a caller from Muncie, New York. Stephen Muncie, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay.
Thank you for taking my call. Okay, Sarah Palin right now is under investigation for firing the public safety commissioner, a man named Walt Monegan, M-O-N-E-G-A-N, because she ordered him to fire a state trooper who was married to her sister, and they went through a messy divorce, and she said, you fire that guy. And he refused to do it, so she fired him. Or at least
I heard about that.
Those are the allegations.
Those are the allegations.
So she's got a little bit of Elliot Spitzer. She's got some kind of troop gate thing going.
Well, if it's true, it would be – thanks for your call, Steve. It would be a sort of, you know, Ross, reverse patronage, right? Not hiring somebody because he's in your family, but firing somebody because he's no longer in your family.
Yeah, and the fact that there was this ongoing potential scandal was one of the things that made me assume I'd always been sort of quietly hoping it was Sarah Palin, but it made me assume that McCain wouldn't actually pick her. I think the fact that he did pick her, you know, you have to assume that the vetting process suggested that there's more smoke than fire in these allegations. My understanding of what happened is that there were serious discipline problems with her brother-in-law, and he was disciplined but not fired, and people in Palin's offices wanted him to be fired and pushed for him to be fired. He wasn't, and then sometime afterwards, the Commissioner of Public Safety, who is, after all, a government appointee, you know, in theory, Sarah Palin does have control over those appointments, fired him. You know, there may be a calculation in the McCain camp that, honestly, this is the kind of scandal that, if anything, could help Sarah Palin. It's like, you know, I mean, so she had a really horrible brother-in-law who was a state trooper and, you know, had discipline problems and wanted him fired. What's wrong with that? Maybe that's the calculation. If it turns out that, you know, there's something much more serious here, I think then, you know, we'll have to say that, well, the McCain camp maybe made a mistake. But for the moment, I think you have to assume that their vetting covered this in some sense.
Yes, and,
Colin,
you know,
Levy, anything on that?
She also has she has been asked these questions in interviews recently, and she has responded to them. I think one of the points that she's made as well is that the divorce had happened some years before the firing. So it wasn't as though suddenly there was this family divorce, and then she, you know, insisted on some sort of retribution through the powers of her office. That doesn't seem to be the case.
Another thing that I'm reading online right now on Politico.com, Mike Allen reporting that Palin dissed the Veep job in an interview just a month ago with Larry Kudlow of CNBC. She dissed the job, saying it didn't seem, quote, productive. Let's see if I can get a little more of that quote here. Kudlow asked her about the possibility of becoming the ticket mate. She replied, quote, as for that VP talk all the time, I'll tell you, I still can't answer that question until somebody answers for me, what is it exactly that the VP does every day? Still quoting, I'm used to being very productive and working real hard in an administration. We want to make sure that VP slot would be a fruitful type of position, especially for Alaskans and for the things that we're trying to accomplish up here for the rest of the U.S. before I can even start addressing that question, unquote. So she really didn't diss the job. She said it wasn't made clear to her yet that she would have a productive role, so maybe they were in some kind of negotiation.
Right. Right. You know, I think the thing about this this particular exchange was very revealing as well about Sarah Palin and something that people are going to like about her, which is that she doesn't do those sort of really stock, vetted answers, the non-denial denials. You know, she speaks her mind. She speaks frankly. She called herself a long shot. She just sort of said what she thought about it. And, you know, obviously she's going to be having some different thoughts on that today. But I certainly don't think that's something that's going to work against her.
Colin Levy from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, Ross Douthat, senior editor at The Atlantic and author of Grand New Party, my guest on WNYC as we talk about John McCain's pick for a running mate, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. And we'll talk more about the Obama convention speech as well as we go along here. But let's take a caller originally from Alaska, I understand, or has some contact with Alaska, Ross in Morristown. Hi, Ross. You're on WNYC.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I was going up to a college in Alaska, University of Alaska, and I really loved it up there, and it was just a great experience. I want to move up there one day, and one thing I just learned from up in Alaska is that a lot of people from the lower 48, they just, they're not really in touch of what people in Alaska think, and they really have no idea what it's like up there.
And how about Governor Palin? Did you have an impression of Governor Palin?
When I was up there, they were, he's like did some good stuff. I mean, he was the best Alaska, the people. He's like really good candidate, I think. Her issues, he's really good for the Alaskan people, and I think that her values can transfer down to the lower 48, which it'll be good for everyone.
Anything you'd say about what those values are?
Well, I just think like, you know, her, he has like a good view on drilling. Like, I think drilling is an important issue, and she's a had a clear view on it being in Alaska where oil is kind of big, you know. But it's like one of the things that's a high paid issue, but that's like one issue I think that she can shed some light on to as someone who has a lot of stake in it.
Ross, thanks a lot for your call. We really appreciate it. And sure enough, Colin Levy, I mean, she obviously is an ideologically consistent pick for John McCain on that question of offshore drilling. And if anything, it reinforces that he believes in what he believes in. A pick of Joe Lieberman, which was widely rumored this week, would have been daring across party lines, largely because of his stance on national security issues. But he would have disagreed with McCain on almost everything else.
No, that's right, and she does have those strong conservative positions. Clearly, the topic of drilling is a really important one for Republicans in this election season. It's somewhere where they've gotten a lot of traction, and I think that in the matchups that she will have with Joe Biden, that's another place that I think she can be a real asset because, you know, quite frankly, you know, as we've seen a bit and discussed a bit in the primaries, it's not easy to attack a woman. It's not easy to go negative on a woman. And as far as, you know, the vice presidential candidate, and particularly one in the Obama ticket, would be tasked with, getting out some of the less savory bits and, you know, allowing Obama to sort of float above it all. I think that Biden will have a harder time coming against her that way. And, you know, in terms of her role on the ticket, the criticism of her as being sort of younger, I think people are going to look at this ticket as being sort of a right-side-up one. McCain's got a lot of experience and can carry that easily. And, it looks sort of the opposite on the other side.
And it's
That's
also
pretty interesting.
Just to jump in for a second, I mean, you know, the Democrats, there is a danger for McCain that, you know, this undercuts his argument about experience. But how do the Democrats go about making that argument? They say, well, Sarah Palin's not ready to be president because she only has 2 years of executive experience and prior to that was working in local government. I mean, are they really going to want to trot out that argument in the
campaign cycle? I'm sure they would say there's a difference between being the governor, the mayor of Wasilla for the last 10 years before, you know, 2 years as governor of Alaska, and being Barack Obama on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a constitutional law professor and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And then you wade right into the executive experience argument as well. So that's the other
right.
way it can go.
Yeah, I mean,
before we run out of time, I want to go to one more clip of Obama from his speech, and Ross, see how it dovetails with the theme of your book, Because your book emphasizes the need for Republicans to focus on Sam's Club voters, as you call them, with something that meets their middle-class anxiety where it is, more than just trickle-down tax cuts and laissez-faire markets. And Obama was going hard after those same voters last night and all week. Obviously, a lot of that speech could have been written by Hillary Clinton, it seemed to me. And let me play one more clip where he goes to the economic question. He cites the now infamous remark by Phil Graham, a close advisor to John McCain, who's been widely mentioned as a likely Treasury Secretary if McCain is the nominee. As we remember, Phil Graham said, America is in a mental recession and we're a nation of whiners. Here's how Barack Obama replied to that.
A nation of whiners. Tell that to the proud auto workers at a Michigan plant who, after they found out it was closing, kept showing up every day and working as hard as ever because they knew there were people who counted on the breaks that they made. Tell that to the military families who shoulder their burdens silently as they watch their loved ones leave for their third or fourth or fifth tour of duty. These are not whiners. They work hard and they give back and they keep going without complaint. These are the Americans I know.
And Ross Douthat, we played earlier the clip of Obama saying that 95% of Americans
would get a tax cut under his plan.
So what's your reaction to all that?
I mean, look, I think that, you know, McCain has a policy problem at the moment. He's in a position, you know, the Republican Party has always been the party of tax cuts. And the reason that message has always resonated is that, you know, Democrats have always said, well, you're cutting taxes on the rich. And Republicans have come back and said, we're cutting taxes on the rich and we're cutting taxes on everybody else as well. And the fact is that at the moment, for, you know, Barack Obama's right that for most middle-income Americans, his tax plan, you know, in the short run, and there are long-term issues with his plans that would possibly raise taxes on middle-class Americans, but in the short run, it would be a tax cut for most Americans. And John McCain doesn't have a plan like that. And I think that there's a reason that a lot of conservatives have been pushing McCain in the direction of finding some sort of middle-class tax cut, because if he doesn't have a stronger one than he has now, Obama can just hammer away at him on that point all the way to November.
Colin Levy, how does that look from the vantage point of the Wall Street Journal editorial board?
Slightly different, perhaps.
Well, I mean, I think what you saw broadly last night at the Democratic convention was this sort of split personality that you're seeing from Barack Obama now, which is that in rhetoric he sounds very moderate and very middle of the road and sort of, you know, post-modern Democrat. And then, but what he also did at the same time was spell out a lot of, you know, red meat for the left. And I think on taxes, that's immensely clear. He said 95% of Americans, but there's all sorts of different taxes out there that hit Americans that aren't income taxes. Those include business taxes and capital gains taxes. And those are places where he's really towing a very traditional liberal Democratic agenda.
Now, here is an email about Sarah Palin from a journalist I know that just came in, who apparently was recently in Alaska. This says, subject line says, she has another problem, Palin versus environment. And this says, when I was in Alaska last week, I also got an earful about something called Pebble Mine. It's a plan to create one of the world's biggest mines in Bristol Bay, which also happens to be home to the state's big Pacific salmon industry. There was a proposal on the Alaska state ballot this Tuesday, primary day, to ban any mines that would hurt salmon. Those urging vote yes on 4 said it was crafted to save the salmon. Palin led the charge to vote no. She took out ads in state newspapers with independent financing. She and other opponents said the measure was too broadly worded. And it says the Enviros said that was a phony argument. I also heard the state did something sleazy by creating a website to oppose the measure, but I can't confirm that. Heard it from two guys in the Bureau of Land Management. Anyway, Marketplace did a story about this earlier in the week. So I don't know if that has legs as a national issue, Colin, but I guess there's another controversy surrounding Sarah Palin.
Well, I think a lot of these micro issues are going to continue to be important in the campaign, the environment being one. Obviously, these were themes that we saw come up in the at the Democratic convention last night as well, guns and the Second Amendment being another one. And so, I think it will be important. People, as on the gun issue, for example, you heard people talking this morning about the fact that she's been a lifetime NRA member, and that's something that's going to bolster her. I'm not sure how much some of these local issues will really capture the public imagination, but we'll find out.
All right. Well. John McCain is going to introduce Sarah Palin officially at noon today. We will have special coverage on WNYC. Colin Levy from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, Ross Douthat from The Atlantic and author of Grand New Party. Either of you going to St. Paul?
I'll be there. I'll be there to see if it actually happens, if they don't push it back.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you know what? Let's just extend another minute, because there does seem to be this real possibility now that with Hurricane Gustav bearing down on the Gulf Coast, they may actually postpone the Republican convention. Is this just talk, or Colin, do you think this is a real possibility?
Boy, I'm still not able to predict the weather, unfortunately. I hope most importantly that the storm isn't significant enough to cause the people in its way any harm, and that
we
that
all
would
certainly,
you know, certainly
that.
This will all be secondary. The political stuff will be secondary if that's what happens.
Right, but if the hurricane does hit, then I guess they have a decision to make, Ross.
They do, and you could argue it both ways. You could argue that by moving, canceling, or pulling back by a day, you're essentially calling attention to the Republican Party's association with, you know, what happened with Hurricane Katrina.
McCain George Bush.
He says, I'm not George Bush. I'm pushing the convention back, and then he flies to Louisiana. If you could come up with something like that, I think just pushing it back and then just sort of going on as if nothing were happening, I think almost gets you the worst of both worlds. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. Well, I'm flying to St. Paul this afternoon, one way or another, hopefully to cover something. And, Ross, when you're there next week, I hope you'll stop by our booth and we'll keep talking about the issues and some of the politics.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot for coming on today. Colin Levy from the Wall Street Journal editorial board. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, we will look at some of the micro body language at the Democratic convention. Stay tuned.
WNYC support comes from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, the best cancer care anywhere, an in-network cancer treatment center for many major health plans in the New York area. More details through insurance providers or mskfirst.org. The New School, offering an MA in teaching English to speakers of other languages, taught online or coupled with a summer residency. Open house Tuesday, September 9th at 6 p.m., 66 West 12th Street, newschool.edu/MATESOL. WNYC makes segments from Soundcheck, Brian and Leonard, and all of Studio 360 and On the Media available on demand. Check out WNYC.org to learn more about how to hear your favorite shows. WNYC On Demand is made possible in part by DataPipe Managed IT Services.
The WNYC News Team is working hard this Labor Day weekend to get ready for the Republican National Convention. Starting Monday, our hosts and reporters will bring you live coverage from St. Paul with insights and analysis throughout the day and special coverage of the primetime speeches at night. For a complete schedule of our convention coverage, visit the Vote 2008 page at WNYC.org.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and while you're at it, why don't you sign up for our free weekly podcast, Digesting Politics. Every week, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and I talk about the presidential race over lunch and send it to your electronic world for free. Digesting Politics is a web-only feature that you won't hear on the radio. Sign up for our Digesting Politics podcast for free at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, for all the grand stagecraft this week, the podiums, the graphics, the videos, the fireworks, the speeches we saw were designed to make an emotional connection. And a lot of that connection is not about the large spectacle, but the smallest expressions or gestures. So now we turn to Paul Ekman, a professor of psychology who is an expert on body language, vocal tone, and what he calls micro expressions. Hi, Paul. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
And you've worked with our friends on Radiolab, but this is your first time on our show, so thanks for doing this. And all this week we've had you watching the speeches and taking a close look at the candidates' body language and other micro-expressions. So first of all, define this term for us, would you, before we start playing some of the clips that we want you to analyze?
Well, what I pay attention to is really style, and that includes everything from the gestures they make to the very small, barely visible microfacial expressions, about a quarter of a second long, to the tone of their voice, the changes in loudness, the stretching of words, all the different aspects of how you say it. And I leave alone, for the most part, although sometimes it's unavoidable, the content of what they say.
So let's replay a little bit of a clip we just heard a few minutes ago, but that you saw something interesting in. This is Barack Obama talking about Phil Gramm's knock on Americans as a nation of whiners.
A nation of whiners. Tell that to the proud auto workers at a Michigan plant who, after they found out it was closing, kept showing up every day and working as hard as ever because they knew there were people who counted on the breaks that they made.
So we've heard the words.
What
were you watching at that
moment? What's interesting there is first the long pause, a nation of whiners. And if you were looking at his face, he had a very quizzical look on his face, as if, how could this be? So there, he said it with his face, not with his words. But when he then spoke after this the pause being there so he could show this expression of disbelief, how could someone say this? He then spoke with great strength. I wouldn't say anger, but strength, power. That's what was most consistent in his entire presentation, was the frequent use of power, both in the gesture, short, hard gestures, and appropriate loudness. And you heard he wasn't shouting, but he was really speaking loudly, much more of this voice emphasis than in the previous speeches I've heard from him.
Any other moment from last night that you would single out to exemplify that?
When he talked about these insurance executives who, when someone is sick, give us sick people such a hard time. I think anyone who's ever had to deal with medical insurance people who's had any kind of illness would immediately resonate to that. And there was outrage. Now, the interesting thing, his outrage, and there was anger at times in his voice, it was never at a person. It was at an in-person. It was at insurance executives. It was at bad policies. I wouldn't say he ever expressed anger directly at McCain, but at policy.
Let's go on to another clip. This time it's a Joe Biden clip from his speech about something that leaves him speechless.
And my wife, Jill, the only one who leaves me both breathless and speechless at the same time.
And, of course,
Biden,
I should have said someone who leaves him speechless.
Yes.
But go ahead.
Well, Biden directed humor at himself. And Biden, in the whole first part of his presentation, acquainted us with him and brought us in to empathize with him as a person, with his relationships with his son, those passages with his mother. And you saw his mother, the sort of prototypic mother of mothers. And then, having set that groundwork, so we were all on his side, and we felt we were, when he talked about folks, he was talking about us. Then he did something that was very, very Buddhist, as if he had gotten instruction from the Dalai Lama or had read the new book that the Dalai Lama and I have coming out next month. That is, he did constructive anger, anger at the action, not at the person. So he said to us, John McCain's my friend. And then he repeatedly referred to him not as McCain, but as John, each time he slammed an action of McCain. So he separated the action from the person. To the person, he maintains friendship. To the action, harsh opposition.
Here's another Biden clip. It's a Freudian slip.
That's the America that George Bush has left us. And that's the America we'll continue to get if John McCain is elected president of the United States of America. Freudian slip.
Freudian slip? Accidentally,
yes,
on purpose? What do you think?
You couldn't plan that. You couldn't do that deliberately. And that shows, and the reason the audience loved it, because that's the whole policy position of the Democratic Party, is that you're just getting more George Bush. And unwittingly, he makes this verbal slip of calling McCain George. If you were a theatrical producer or director, you couldn't get someone to do that for you. It just happened, and it worked perfectly.
Now, how do you do this? You sit there with your TiVo or something?
Yes, it's all on TiVo, and I slow motion occasionally. But I've been doing this for decades, so I don't usually need the slow motion anymore. I see it when it happens and hear it when it happens.
All right, let's go on to a clip of Michelle Obama talking about values.
And Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values. Like, you work hard for what you want in life. That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do. That you treat people with dignity and respect.
All right, what were you watching there?
Well, she was very interesting because of all the people who spoke at the Democratic convention, she used the most hand gestures. And she got her hands out in front of the podium, and they were large in expanse, and they were very, very frequent. And I know from the research that I've done and published that we like people who speak in an animated way. We like people who use their hands when they talk, and we tend to trust them. So I'm convinced that she could not have done that deliberately. This is her, but it was very, very effective. And now I do want to comment on one other thing that is sort of a problem, and I don't know what she could do about it. And that is, when you look at her face in repose, as we often saw her when other people were speaking last night and the night before, the cameras cut away to get her response. She, in the area of her forehead, immediately above her eyebrows, the bony structure is prominent, and that suggests the possibility that she's either perplexed or scowling. She's neither. This is just how her face is constructed. Now, it's emphasized by the fact that those inner corners of her eyebrows come all the way down, very sharply down. So when she smiles, you don't see that at all. But when she's thinking, it looks like she's either upset about something or doesn't get it. And I'm certain neither is the case. That's just a false impression from how her face is constructed.
Can we do this at home? Can we listen to you and hear what you're doing and become a nation of Paul Ekmans?
We do teach people. We teach people, everyone from the TSA to insurance adjusters, claim adjusters. But it takes a couple of days to teach people this material. You can get some of it from a book, but a lot of it's like learning how to play tennis. You can only learn the rules from the book. You need the coach and the practice to become a good player.
We have a phone call for you. Let's talk to Rebecca in Brooklyn, I think it is. Rebecca, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, in Manhattan.
Hi, sorry.
Actually, this is in reference to Michelle's speech and to her brother Craig's introduction. I noticed that both of them would begin to point at the audience to emphasize a point and then very quickly draw back their hand into something softer. I just wondered whether they were coached to, ooh, don't point at the audience. Had you noticed that?
Well, you're certainly right. They do a lot of pointing, and all of our speakers did. None did as much pointing as Michelle. They were almost always emphasis points, but what she didn't do was to shake that finger at us. Do you remember in Clinton's denial of Lewinsky, he scolded us as an old-fashioned parent might scold a child. But I, of course, have no way to know whether they were coached or whether they're just aware of the fact that you don't want to shake your finger at people. But pointing, her husband did that, Biden did that, I'm doing that right now.
And Bill Clinton's a pointer, isn't he? Who will ever forget, I didn't have sexual relations with that woman, right? And Bill Clinton's always been a pointer.
Yes. And he did it in his speech the other day. But the a different aspect of it, since I use TiVo, and of course, you know, I'm on the West Coast, so I don't get these at the same time that you see them on the East Coast. I came right, you know, I recorded the whole 6 hours, and then I searched for Michelle. And she started by talking about her brother. Well, I hadn't seen her brother's introduction. I just saw her, so I wondered, why is she talking about her brother? He's not running for president. So unless you had actually seen it live and got the brother's introduction, the first minute of her talk made no sense. After that, it all worked perfectly.
Let's play one more clip, then, of Michelle Obama talking about other people in her family.
Hi, Daddy!
Hey, sweetie! Hello, everybody. Hello from Kansas City. How about Michelle Obama? Now you know why I asked her out so many times.
All right. What were you listening to that for, Paul Ekman, or what were you seeing? There was a lot going on there, right? There was Barack Obama on a video screen. Michelle had just given her speech, and the kids were there interacting with their father on video, and we're told they didn't even know that he was going to be there on video. I don't know if that's true, but there was a lot going on physically.
Well, I was a proud dad and a proud husband, proud of his wife, proud of his kids, but there was a perplexing part to it. First of all, why is he just in a shirt? Why is he in Kansas? Nobody explained any of that to me. So it seemed to me that although it was really nice kind of family stuff of just what you would expect how a husband and father would respond when his wife did something really quite inspiring, it was also a little perplexing. And the contrast between the formality of the dress and manner of Michelle and Barack was a little disconcerting also because we just didn't have the context as to why is he in Kansas in somebody's home in a open white shirt while there she's giving this speech in a much more formal attire. So that was a little
Paul
disconcerting.
Ekman, professor of psychology who is an expert on body language, vocal tone, and what he calls micro-expressions. He will be back with us next week during the Republican convention to do another spot like this. That was really interesting, Paul. Thanks so much for doing it with us.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A lot more to come. We'll check in again with Mo Rocca on some of the wackier convention goings-on. We'll take more of your calls on Sarah Palin and the Obama speech. And then we'll have special coverage at noon on AM 820 of the formal announcement of Sarah Palin as John McCain's running mate. Again, at noon, you will have a choice, the Leonard Lopate Show, as usual, on 93.9, or I'll hang around for special coverage on AM 820 as McCain introduces his running mate. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
WNYC receives support from The Silver Palette, makers of Silver Palette marinara and other pasta sauce made with whole tomatoes from the volcanic soil of San Marzano, Italy, and blended with whole tomatoes from the fertile Central California Valley. No tomato paste ever used. Elegante, Silver Palette. The River to River Festival, free music, art, and dance downtown. Upcoming performances include Ray Martinez, the Latin Giants of Jazz, and more. Details, rivertoriverNYC.com.
Wine isn't the only thing that gets better with age. Join us Thursday, September 25th for our first ever 40 and over singles event. Leonard Lopate hosts the evening, which features conversations with wine experts, wine tastings, and plenty of time to mingle. Raise a glass with other WNYC listeners Thursday, September 25th at the Housing Works Bookstore Cafe. Visit our website for details and tickets on the events page at WNYC.org.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and while the nominating conventions are going on in Denver and St. Paul, our 30 Issues in 30 Days nominating process is now underway at WNYC.org, and we invite you to nominate an issue for our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. More than 100 people have nominated already. We will vote on your issues online next month. Nominate one now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Well, it is time once again to check in with Mo Rocca one more time on the convention's wacky side and how he's looking forward to a week in St. Paul. Now, do I have that right, Mo? Are you actually going to St. Paul?
I'm headed to the Twin Cities, and I've got to tell you, I love the Twin Cities. So this is wonderful for me. This is a boondoggle.
Which of the Twin Cities do you like better?
I like St. Paul because I feel like St. Paul is a little bit of it gets ignored and overlooked. It's sort of the Jan Brady of the Twin Cities, even though, of course, she was one of three sisters. But I feel badly. St. Paul has a lot going for it, even though it's a smaller city. It has the longest stretch uninterrupted of Victorian housing in America. The Twin Cities together have the second most theater seats per capita in America. It's got a lot going for it. But St. Paul is special.
Not many people, but a lot of theater seats. So did you watch the Obama speech last night?
I was in an Invesco Field, and I got to tell you, when I got in there, I was a little concerned. I thought, what kind of a pagan ritual is going to go on here? Is there going to be some sacrifice? Is Obama supposed to be Apollo? Is Oprah going to be Demeter, the goddess of the earth? Is Scarlett Johansson
with all those Greek columns on the stage?
Exactly. And I was using Roman names, excuse me, but I could give you the Greek ones as well.
Or maybe they were Roman columns. I don't know.
I think that they were Roman. What it really looked like is the gallery that connects the Oval Office to the main White House, where the Rose Garden in front, which I think actually was probably sort of the point of it to look presidential. I also feared that it would be like Woodstock, people rolling around in the mud, no one wearing deodorant. But actually, it really was surprisingly normal when you were there. A lot of sort of wonky types, concerned citizens. I mean, really, you know, there's something they do in that stadium called Rocky Mountain Thunder during Broncos games, and I'm a huge football fan, where they stomp the floor with their feet. And I've got to tell you that Sheryl Crow and John Legend got a smattering of Rocky Mountain Thunder. Bill Richardson, it was off the charts. And, I mean, sorry, he's not Mr. Personality. So these really were people that were not celebrity-crazed. They weren't, nor were they Jim Jonesy, glassy-eyed cultists. I mean, they were normal people. So.
And which of these normal people were you sitting with?
Well, I was three rows in front of Oprah. Now, here's the thing. The Obama campaign deftly kept the celebrities out of sight. I mean, you didn't see Ben Affleck in any of the shots, and I think that was probably by design. Oprah was in a box that was three rows behind my row, and that was just luck of the draw. And I do have to say, and it sounds like I'm backpedaling, for Oprah, people did go batty. They went bonkers. So you had Oprah come out, and she sort of waved, you know, through the box. She seemed very, very friendly, and I like Oprah because I'd love to go on her show one day and sell something. And she was there with her best friend, Gail. I like Gail. I've met her. I have a lot of sympathy with her. I mean, it's got to be the highest pressure job in the world to be Oprah's best friend, because if your cell phone rings and it's Oprah, you can't silence it. You got to pick it up at any time. I'd love to be Gail's best friend, if only to take some of the pressure off of Gail for being Oprah's best friend. But in any case, she was there with Gail. She was there with Mary J. Blige, Forrest Whitaker, Kanye West. So people did get excited about that. But even there, people were more focused on what was happening on stage.
And what of poor Denver? What of poor Denver? We're loving it, and now we're leaving it?
I always feel bad for these cities. This happens every 4 years with the whole state of Iowa and New Hampshire. And now it's happening with Denver. I mean, Denver had its last convention 100 years ago. So only every 100 years does it get a lot of attention. It's like Brigadoon. Like every 100 years it comes to life. And, you know, I feel bad. I think they're going through post-convention stress disorder right now. I mean, it's like a more extreme form of being a jilted lover. So I'm not sure how they're going to cope with this, but you know, it's on to Minneapolis-St. Paul. I mean, it's tough, but, I mean, Denver becomes Miss Lonely Hearts again because we're all about the Twin Cities right now.
And now, Mo, you have a former Miss Alaska as John McCain's running mate.
That's not going to sound good, McCain Palin, because McCain is sort of pale. But in any case, no. I mean, look, we don't. I don't like everyone else. We don't know anything about her, so it's we don't know that much about her. So it'll be exciting. This is a get to know you period.
All right, Mo Rocca, we'll hear you on NPR. We'll see you on the Tonight Show.
And you might see me on Oprah after this interview.
Maybe not after this interview. Mo, thanks a lot for joining us all week.
We
really
appreciate
it. It's been a lot of fun.
Great,
okay.
Thanks.
Soon, very soon. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And now we're going to open up the phones for your reactions to anything at the Democratic Convention this week and your reactions to Sarah Palin as the pick of John McCain to be his running mate. 212-433-WNYC. You be the pundit, folks. Did Obama need it? Do what he needed to do in that speech last night, 212-433-9692. And Republicans, Democrats, anyone else, what do you think of this pick of Sarah Palin, 212-433-9692? Or keep this conversation going all day long at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for our comments pages. Again, as we've been hearing, Sarah Palin, 44-year-old, governor of Alaska, 5 kids, a son born this year with Down syndrome. She placed second in the Miss Alaska pageant in 1984. She was not Miss Alaska per se. She was the mayor of a small town called Wasilla, just 5,400 people, for 10 years until 2006 when she was elected governor. And we actually have a guest now, Patrick Forgy. He is the state government reporter for the Juneau Empire. Patrick, thanks a lot for joining us on short notice. Hello from New York. Really, I'm in Denver, but you're on New York radio station, WNYC. Hi.
Oh, hi. Thank you.
So what do we need to know about Sarah Palin?
Well, it's certainly a shock up here, but it's an interesting choice for John McCain, that's for sure.
You know, we're getting reactions from all kinds of perspectives. I'll give you two opposing ones. I just saw actually on Fox News that they have a quote from Geraldine Ferraro saying that this may pick off some women voters who were Hillary supporters. On the other hand, I'm looking at somebody I follow on Twitter who just wrote, "The argument for Palin carried to its logical end is that all women are so angry they'll vote for literally anybody but Obama." Got that into 140 characters. That was pretty good. So what distinguishes Sarah Palin as governor of Alaska?
Well, her distinguishing characteristic so far has been fighting corruption. We've had an ongoing problem up here, representatives going to jail under investigation. You know, Senator Ted Stevens has recently been indicted. Congressman Don Young is under investigation by the feds.
Well, let me jump right in because our time is short. And you say fighting corruption, but one of the things that came up earlier is that there's this little thing swirling around her where she may have fired somebody from state government because that person was getting divorced from someone in her family. What's that about?
There's an ongoing issue with a trooper. A few years ago had a pretty bitter divorce with her sister. The trooper appears to be a real piece of work, but got a reprimand after, you know, kind of committing some pretty serious violations. And after Palin took office, she began looking into, apparently expressed concern to some of her staff about that. She's claiming she never actually made a overt threat, and the state legislature is now investigating whether she misused her office or not.
Gosh, we're very used to this kind of Troopergate story in New York State. But I don't know if Sarah Palin is an Elliot Spitzer. Let's take a phone call from Max in Manhattan. Max, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. I feel very cynical about this. It feels like a stunt to me. And I feel like the Republican Party's been kind of pushed into this because of the historic nature of Obama and Clinton's runs. And so now they've chosen this woman, but is this really organic diversity that's coming from them, or is this just, you know, kind of a ruse? I feel a lot like Condoleezza Rice being a black woman pushing forth the Bush agenda. And I just wonder, are Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh really going to go on TV and talk about the virtue of having a woman vice president, especially if something...
And
possibly,
it's a good question. And yeah, are they going to make the case that Sarah Palin is the most qualified person for this job? Do we have a Clarence Thomas situation here? Do you think, Patrick, from the Juneau Empire, that people in Alaska think Sarah Palin is the most qualified Republican in America to be vice president of the United States?
Well, they might. She's awfully darn popular. But I got to admit that the word stunt was one of the first things that crossed my mind, too. I can't imagine her picking off a lot of Clinton supporters, no matter how disaffected they are. She's, you know, pretty strongly anti-abortion, anti-gay rights. She's pragmatic. She doesn't, you know, push it when she doesn't have the votes, but that's her core beliefs.
Sean, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Sean.
Sure. So I'm actually very excited about her as a pick. I think, for one, there is a good chance. I think a lot of the younger women, let's say, who grew up after Roe v. Wade, abortion is going to be such a pressing issue for them. So I really don't think that's going to cost her many, many votes. So I'm actually looking forward to her being as a vice president.
All right. And as a Republican, I'm guessing that you're speaking, do you think that she is the most qualified person for this job?
I mean, I don't think anyone can dispute that. But, you know, I think, and I think he was a little bit rough on Obama because these people surround themselves with so many qualified staffers that I think if you just, you know, are able to show good judgment along the way, I think that goes a whole lot more distance.
All right. All right. Thank you for your call. Let's see. Tell us about Wasilla. Wasilla, Alaska, I understand population about 5,500. And Sarah Palin spent 1996 to 2006 as mayor of Wasilla. What would her job have been like?
Actually, she was more kind of noteworthy on a statewide perspective from some she had not been mayor of Wasilla that recently.
Okay.
But she had been on the State Oil and Gas Commission and had the chairman of the Republican Party had been the chairman of the commission. And she had opposed some of the things he had done, running campaigns out of his office and that kind of thing, went public with her complaints. When the governor didn't do anything about it, she resigned in protest, later took on the incumbent governor, that was Frank Murkowski, former U.S. senator, and beat him handily in the primary and then won the election. So,
Patrick Forgy, state government reporter for Juneau, the Juneau Empire in Juneau, Alaska, helping to introduce us to John McCain's running mate, Sarah Palin. Thanks a lot for coming on with us. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
And, folks, we're now going to give you a choice. You can listen to the Leonard Lopate Show, as usual, on 93.9 FM or on AM 820 WNYC. We'll have NPR special coverage of John McCain's formal announcement of Sarah Palin as his running mate. I'm off to the airport to fly to St. Paul. I thank our fabulous engineering and production team here in Denver. Have a great weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday. I will tweet along the way at twitter.com and wnyc.org. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.